Welcome, one and all, with your host, Rolando, and his co-host, John. We are the Skeleton Boys.
Hello and welcome to the Skeleton Boys Horror Movie Podcast. I'm Rolando.
And I'm Johnny, who just got an iPhone 14 Plus after having an iPhone 8 Plus for X amount of years.
That is quite a generational leap. Jesus Christ.
You know, yeah. It is upsetting that the home button doesn't exist.
Does it?
It is.
Sorry, I don't mean to laugh at you.
But it is just very funny, annoying. Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty acclimated to the phone right now, but I definitely miss my homies. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. The clicks, the taps, the clicks.
God. So a little quick sidebar story. While I was working on this show since October, a lot of the propage was like brand new phones and like laptops and shit like that, which the laptops, I'm like, I can figure that shit out. The new iPhones, like the first like 3 weeks, I'm like, guys, I have an iPhone 8. Why are you like putting this fucking responsibility on me? I have no idea what the shit is. Like, where's the home button? I just keep like slamming my thumb at the bottom of like the phone. Like, why isn't this working?
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's rough.
It's rough.
But now
and
I
welcome
got
to the show.
Guy. Yeah, I got this guy and it's so wonderful. Like, you wouldn't believe the dramatic difference in the porn quality you can watch with these different iPhones.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely,
like, I don't know why that is like one of the fucking things that they tell you in the descriptions. Like, hey, it's got this camera, you know, it's got this resolution. And also, like, porn looks so much better. I'm like, whoa, fuck, I would have fucking bought one last year.
It's like you're in the room with them now. It's great.
I can smell it and it's so stinky, but now I think I like that. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, all kind of weird kinks. This week, we will review Nanny. As always, John will give us the plot in 5 words. We'll give our first thoughts and then go to deep spoiler analysis. But first, we go back to TV Corner and we conclude Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities before we talk about The Murmuring. What'd you think? What'd you think of the series? Overall, what are your thoughts?
First off, let me go ahead and rebrand the name of our show for this episode and say, hey, we are the Skeleton Boys and we review very depressing horror movies. We had a twofer this time around.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, The Murmuring. No. I'll just quickly say.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I did really like it, but how incredibly sad. Like, it was never scary, and I was just really like, damn. If you had told me, like, hey, Rebecca Hall's going to be in this, I'd be like, yeah, that checks out.
Well, there was no baby in the oven, so that doesn't check out. So
No, because the baby was too soaked to put in
drowned.
The oven. The baby was completely submerged in water.
I think there's a reason why this is the last one. I think it's the best one. Uh-huh. I agree with you that, yeah, it's not like gives you the creeps and the scares and everything, but I think that there's a beautiful story here told wonderfully by the super talented Jennifer Kent. I was super excited watch this. I just recently saw The Babadook. We saw it. We reviewed it for an episode. And so I've been a super fan of Jennifer Kent, and this is like the second thing I've seen her do. It was really cool to see S.C. Davis
100%
in this as well.
Deals with grief also.
I know, dude. I think that.
And I can't even say that's her thing because she's definitely done other stuff, but like, if you're two for two with Jennifer Kent, these are them. It seems like her whole thing is like grief.
Grief, yeah. And
I want her and Ari Aster to do a film together. That way, when you go and watch it, you're not scared, but you come out just sobbing and being thankful for life.
As a gimmick, the ushers give you blades in case you want to slit your wrists because it's so sad. No,
not funny.
I really liked, she did a really good job of really setting this in the 50s, I imagine.
Oh,
like the 50s.
Which I want to point out, every single one of these have been stylized except Pandulsa Cosmorologists one.
Okay.
His was the only one that wasn't like gothically stylized almost.
True. I was going to make a comparison to the other one that was set, the witch one I didn't like, the Catherine Hardwicke one. That is also set in the past and did a really poor job of setting me there into the past. And I think that Jennifer Kent expertly sets us into and really immerses you almost immediately into this world of kind of like scientific bird watching. Is that basically what we're doing? And I am so happy to see Andrew Lincoln do something other than The Walking Dead because he's a fabulous actor and he's fucking amazing.
He was in Love Actually.
Actually, he was in Love Actually. He's terrific in this, but
are we able to really sense who are directors and who are people that who are given chances to direct? Does that make sense? Like Jennifer Kent's like ability to like you're saying, like the world looked good and you can't blame a bad production designer or a bad DP. Cause for the most part, it's all the same crew except for the director. And, like some of them, it's like maybe the director couldn't really give full attention to things, but it seems like Jennifer Kent really took her time with it.
All I'm saying is Catherine Hardwicke came from a production designer design background or something, right? And I thought hers was the most poorly designed one out of all of them.
Yeah, but you're talking about her big production design credits are Vanilla Sky, which was like basically nothing, and Freaked. So
well, there's a future setting. Huh? I'm just saying, she sat around and has thought about this stuff. Does that make sense? Like she clearly she got paid professionally to do these things. So I'm just saying, but I like the way we pointed out that yes, there you could tell who the auteurs are. You know, and you can tell who are the ones who have come to direct an episode of Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities. Yeah. And yeah, you're absolutely right, man. This one hit well, man. I really, really enjoyed it. I really liked it. This is like a Rolando type story movie.
And 100%. Upsetting Rolando, this was not my favorite one.
Ah, of course.
I did like it. I did love it. I loved it. But it wasn't my favorite one. Mm-hmm.
I will say the ending's super hard because if you're not, it's ambitious because if you're not super invested, then the ending's going to fall flat on you. So that's how I see it. Like it hit for me and I like what he was talking about. I like what he was saying, but I can see if you're not like there, it's a very risky way to end your movie. And like you were saying, I did love, so that you like you said, I did like it that it's about grief, like you had mentioned, and I love that the Nancy, who's the one seeing these ghosts and everything, and then Edgar is not. Nancy has that conversation with the guy that set him up in that house and says that like grief sees grief,
which is
a beautiful way of kind of explaining why some people can see ghosts, why some people can't, I guess, some sort of reasoning behind it.
There's also,
which I thought was a nice, isn't there nice a history way behind, to explain
like,
it.
Like, not was it an incubus or a succubus? Not that sex one, but the other one feeds off grief, right? I think we've seen it in several things.
There's, oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, what I can't was think the, of the name. Afghani, the Afghanistan.
That was a djinn.
Yeah, which is supposed to be the equivalent. Like, I know it's supposed to be a genie, but the equivalent of one of these things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, absolutely. I just can't recall. I want to say succubus, but that is probably incorrect.
Like, almost clearly sounds like the sex one, which means... because of sucking it. You're welcome, ladies and gentlemen, non-barrier pals. bam, show over. We've hit our stride.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed that part about it. But I'm just wondering when Jennifer Kent's going to give Essie Davis a break from losing children or and not being... tormented by things that are so sad and need her help.
Yeah, I know. Clearly, Essie Davis is the surrogate for Jennifer Kent in these stories somehow.
Yeah, Jennifer Kent's like, hey, Essie, I got another role for you. She's like, oh, who did I lose this time? Well, it's your wife this time. She's like, oh, okay. But your hair is going to be red. It's not black or blonde. You're welcome.
Yeah. This was very good, very emotional. Loved every second of it. But the ending does fall. I can see where it's a very ambitious ending. But loved everything in between. Real quick, do you want to just talk about how, your feelings on this? Do you want to see season two of Guillermo del Toro's Cabin to Curiosity?
Oh, absolutely. Or? This was like... in my opinion, even the weakest one was still like leaps and bounds better than like a lot of the crap I've seen, you know?
Right. Like other anthology series that have.
Or TV series in general, you know? Like, or like, yeah, anthology slash TV series.
Okay. Yeah. Do you have any favorites? Which one do you think was your favorite?
So, I feel like if Pickman's model played out a different way, it would have been my favorite one. I think I'm gonna go with the autopsy, actually.
The autopsy, yeah, that seems to be the one I've heard the most people enjoyed in terms of like being the crowd pleaser, which I totally see. I just like you said, I had some nitpicks with it. Here, I'm going to pull up the list so I can look at them real quick so I can give you...
So if I had to go in any sort of order, I think it would be the autopsy, then it would be the murmuring, then it would be the viewing.
Okay.
And it sucks because like Pickman's model, like there was something about it that I really loved. I mean, aside from Crispin Glover, it was like... I really liked it, but I feel like it's something that should have been a feature length, you know? Maybe would have made more sense.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I think if I had to pick three, I would pick The Murmuring, I would pick The Outside, and I really liked Graveyard Rats. Those are probably my three.
Oh, I was going to say Graveyard Rats definitely made me feel the most uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's true.
I did not love the claustrophobia aspect of it.
Yeah.
And it is by far the shortest one, too.
Yeah, exactly.
At 37 minutes.
Just a nice, tight, efficient, well-done episode. Yeah, that was really good.
Yeah. The worst one is definitely Dreams in the Witch House.
Mm-hmm. I feel like in retrospect, as much as I enjoyed Pickman's model, I think about it less.
Yeah.
I think it's because I wasn't completely satisfied maybe with the ending, though I liked some of the performances. And as of this episode, the episode that we reviewed it on dropped, so I recently heard it again, and I had mentioned that the protagonist was a little passive, which also I thought was a big sticky.
That's right. That's also what killed it for me too. Yeah, that the protagonist was basically a wallflower to the entire story, it felt like.
Yeah. Yeah. It did motivate me to watch Firestarter, the new one. That night I checked it out.
Yeah, was it good?
I think
Oh, it's okay.
But here's the thing.
Tone. Yeah, yeah, sorry.
It's not the direction. I would say the script is bad. Yeah. It's a bad adaptation. And
it's probably from some shit story. Like, whoever the fuck, was it like a book or some boring stuff like that?
Richard Bachman, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the guy that did The Running Man, which I'll never watch because fuck exercise. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. It was a really poor adaptation. It's a really like painful, dialogue scenes in there, and there's some poorly drawn out characters, and there's some like really, I'll say this, ambitious shots in this movie, in the movie. Yeah. But there's some nice performances, there's some nice stuff in it. Just like the Pikmin's model, there's like some things were good about it, some things weren't good about it. It's just kind of like a mix.
I also feel that ending, where he's finally being confronted by the dude's like family, sort of. And we're not sure if it was a real family or just the guy's imagination. I feel like we're finally going to get his actual characterization. So I felt like it stopped too early almost. Or that should have happened way earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. I definitely agree with that. I mean, if they do a season two of this, I would love to see a couple of new directors and maybe bring some of these more auteur directors. You know, I'd love to see a second one by Jennifer Kent. And even though I didn't particularly like The Viewing very much, I thought it was like kind of muddled at the beginning. I would love to see a second thing from him. I think he's a very interesting director.
It's definitely the most fascinating Cosmosos. To watch. Yeah,
exactly. Like, it was visually stimulating one. That's definitely what I would love to send or ask, Edwin or Paul or Stouffer or somebody. Just like, what the fuck do you think of this? This is fucking crazy.
What do you think of Pankos's The Viewing?
Because they'll hit us with the story and they'll hit us with like all the, you know, Edwin tell us all the visual stuff that's going on in this movie that I didn't catch. So yeah,
he'll tell us that, and he'll tell us how it relates to like different psychedelic drugs that we weren't aware of.
I know that he took in the South America.
Thank you, Edwin.
Thank you. Yeah.
But what about Lot 36?
Lot 36 was, like I said, man, that was the a weak one. Come right out of the gate. But I'm telling you, they should have come out with Graveyard Rats. Graveyard Rats would have been the perfect first episode for me. But yeah, no, I really want to see this thing return. But it's Netflix. You never really know what's going to get a second season, what's going
to... Like, who would you want to direct some episodes?
Oh, my God. I was afraid you're going to ask that question. I don't have anything particularly prepared.
I would love to see something... Like? I'm sorry, what? Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, go ahead.
I would love to see Anthony Scott Burns direct one of these.
Oh, dude. What is he doing right now? Anything?
He's definitely... Watch Come True. There you go. That was my plug. All right, good night.
Come True. I think his style.
You can watch Come True on Hulu right now.
Format. Sorry. Yeah, go watch Come True. It's an excellent movie. His style would definitely fit this anthology series, but I think he might be too like auteurish, I feel like, for something like this.
But what about Pankos though? You know what I'm saying? Like, Pankos is super auteurish. He's the most auteurish of the auteurishes.
I feel like he's the type of director who's like the Robert Rodriguez. He did everything himself, right? That's kind of like everything's handmade by him. So it'd be interesting to see him work with like, you know, a very comfortable budget, a lot of people. Doesn't have to do, has a strict, you know, deadline and when you need to finish these things and adapt something or write something. So that's always kind of tough, you know, when you're like a writer, like a writer director, and you've done everything yourself, and then you have to like, you're so used to doing that. It's kind of like tough to duplicate it in a way.
It is something everybody struggles with, especially just like from personal experience, coming from like a non-union world in my field, going to a union world where the like things are supposed to happen a certain way. Like, you're learning the real way to do things at this point.
That's true. Yep. Yep.
You're so used to a certain sort of style of like doing your job. You want to argue like, no, this isn't the way things should work. I'm coming up with something innovative, but then it's always like, you're going to clash with people because like, there's a reason these positions exist and why people divvy up like the responsibilities and all that. So I can understand like somebody struggling with it.
Especially, yeah, it's definitely something you got to get used to working with crews and stuff like that. Real quick, the person I would probably pick is maybe Parker Finn, who directed Smile. I think he would probably fit really well with this.
Yeah.
I think also the guy who did Barbarian. I would love to see him do something in this.
Oh, the Whitest Kids guy, yeah.
The Whitest Kids guy, yeah. I would love to see him do something in this realm. I think he probably would come up with something fun.
Do you think it'd be fun to see Danny McBride write something?
I mean, that's a very leading question. I don't know where you're going with that.
I mean, because I'm going to say, like, I thoroughly enjoyed, I mean, I haven't seen the last Halloween.
Right? Oh, get on that.
I know, yeah. But like,
I loved it.
But even, like, when people say, like, oh, this wasn't that great, I'm like, I think it's still pretty fucking, like, it's a good mixture of funny, but it's also like you're never laughing at Michael Myers. Whenever he pops out, you're like, fuck, 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 fuck. So cool. I don't know. I like Danny McBride's writing.
No, I agree. I agree. I think he collaborates really closely with David Gordon Green. He's also a very interesting director. He had a very interesting career because he started super, you know, indie dramas. And then got into the studio system and started directing comedies, action movies. And one consistency he's had through all of that is working with Danny McBride, and they work really close together. They co-wrote all the new Halloween trilogy together. And yeah, I think they've come up with a lot of crazy, weird. They've taken that whole thing in a really interesting direction, especially the end. It's super ambitious, which I think you need to watch.
Which I kind of know what already happens, but yeah.
I'm not but watch it. It's better to watch it than to read it.
Do you think Stephen Konstansky has a shot in the next season of Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities?
Does not ring a bell.
Do you think Guillermo would be all about like, yeah, I want the guy that directed The Void and the guy that directed Psycho Gorman.
Oh yeah,
direct one for me. I don't know.
Oh yeah, definitely, dude.
That'd be
so
much fun.
Those are also great names. Yeah, those are two excellent names too. That would bring a whole different flavor to what this is. You know, those two, they have very wild styles. Yeah. It'd be really interesting to see what they come up with. Yeah.
But I think somebody that would be right up their alley is, but he hasn't done anything since the movie we saw. I'm going to fucking butcher this. Igor Abramenko is a guy that directed Sputnik.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's right up his alley, right?
That's true. Yeah. I think he's an interesting director too.
And then the whoever did The Innocents, which I could probably look up.
Swedish, maybe Finnish,
Nordic. Let's just go with Nordic.
Nordic, there you go. Yeah. I forgot.
Eskil or Eskil Vogt?
Nailed it.
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah. Well, I hope it gets a season two. Definitely hope it gets a season two then.
Oh shit. Which, I mean, sidebar, but like, I didn't know. So the guy that did The Innocents, the writer of The Innocents?
Mm-hmm.
Also wrote The Worst Person in the World. Mind fucking blown.
No shit. That was a great movie.
Wow, that's pretty impressive, right? Holy shit. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Maybe this is somebody we should put on our radar. Just remember the name. Isko Vogt. Totally going to remember that. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, got it.
Yes. Definitely saved in my memory bank.
Yeah. Cool. Well, hopefully season two comes out relatively soon. We won't forget about it. Let's forget about it, and then when it shows up, it'll be a big surprise. Like, oh, it's back. We waited 3 years for this to return.
You want to introduce a movie? I'm going to be like 2 seconds away from the computer. I'll be right back.
Okay, yeah. So for our main review, we are reviewing Nanny from Amazon Prime. As Johnny moves around, even though he knows he's part of the next segment. Johnny, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
For the Skeleton Boys' most depressing episode.
That's debatable. That's true. I don't know.
That is true. For the Nanny, 2022's The Nanny, not the one named Fran.
That's a good one.
No, that's not one, but it should have been.
okay.
With the most gorgeous cast I've ever seen in my life. I'm not talking about the kids, but like,
oh, yeah.
Anna Diop and Michelle Monaghan. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, I get it. Everything, like the cinematography was beautiful. The story was somewhat beautiful. And then these actresses, I'm like, Jesus fucking hell, dude. Like, there's so gorgeous. I had a hard time getting past that, by the way. I'm like, why is this cast so beautiful? Coming in at number 3, innocent kids scapegoated for relationships.
Relationships?
Yeah.
I'm just like, making sure I heard that right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you totally heard that. Coming in at number 2 for the Nanny, immigrant deals with white bullshit.
There you go. That's just. There it is.
Yep. And coming in at number 1 for the Nanny, Nanny introduces child to Flavortown.
Flavortown?
Yeah, because the kid wasn't eating until she started making good food with actual spices.
Oh, there it is. Yeah. I didn't get that right away.
I'm pretty sure was the point of the movie, actually. The kid was like, oh, I can't eat stuff because it hurts my stomach. And then this lady comes in and is like, have you ever tried flavor? She's like, oh, I like eating now.
Suddenly I'm a normal kid.
Yeah.
Okay, John, what did you think of The Nanny?
Oof. I don't think I have it in me to watch this movie again. Okay. I thought the idea and a lot of the flow was very beautiful. The acting was fucking brilliant. It was so amazing. I am not a super fan of the story.
Yeah.
The way it started playing out, I was like, I understand it's beautiful, but I am about to be bored to tears if this continues on the way it's going. And then it kind of went like that till the end of the movie. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. I almost completely agree with you, like, on every point you made. Like, I think that there's story elements I was confused by, and meander a little bit in the middle to where I actually did stop the movie. I'm like, how long is this movie? It's like, yeah, like I'm enjoying everything I'm watching and seeing, but man, how fucking long is this?
Same with me. I legitimately did stop it at one point because I was like, I had yesterday to watch it, so I started watching it, and then I was like, how about I just watch Snack Time on Netflix instead? The reality-based competition show where people try to recreate famous snacks. So I did.
Take a pause, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said, I thought amazing cinematography, beautifully shot, very dreamlike, surrealistic, nice, like... some nice, like, well-designed, like, scenes to invoke scares, but not really scares. They're just, like, beautifully shot stuff. Great performances. Anna Diop is amazing in this. She's actually, well, I was introduced to her through Titans.
Right.
And I was super skeptical on her playing Starfire. Only because the character description I had read was like she's playing some like hooker and whatever or something that she doesn't know she's Starfire. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? And the show ended up being very mixed, but she's excellent in it. And she brings a lot of just presence and nuance to a rather thin character in that show. And I feel like here she's able to completely like stretch like muscles and flex them and just like own every minute of this movie.
And not for nothing, in Titans also, it's kind of a bummer whenever she's on screen because she's like acting circles around the person who is with
her. Yeah, that's true.
It's because like true, I'm not gonna like the actors in Titans aren't like the strongest. Like, and then my favorite one they got rid of because he went on to do fucking Reacher, the TV show Reacher, which I loved also.
Yeah.
Like Alan Richardson, I was like, oh, of course they're gonna fucking kill him.
Yeah.
And it's like, I like what's her name a lot? The person that plays Dove.
Oh, yeah.
But I think, like, however she's portraying Dove in that show, I'm like, this is bad. I don't like this.
The writing's not always the best on that show. And, no,
it's like tough. Also, the worst portrayal of Bruce Wayne I've ever seen in my life. There, I said it. Sorry, dude.
It's true. So just kind of quickly explain, I mean, the story is pretty thin in that it's about an immigrant nanny who starts taking care of rich, snobby white people's kid. But the kid's cool. But
yeah, kid's super cool from like immediately. Immediately super cool.
She somehow gets, the parents are, of course, are the ones who are the shitty husband who cheats and the like. The sort of
neurodivergent sort of, well, I don't want to say neurodivergent because I don't know what her mental history is, but like the neurosis, neurotic sort of mom and
super, I don't know how you describe it. Like, just like super like picky and like uptight, mother. And yeah, I mean, that story is fine and it kind of plays out, but it's just sort of tied to this past that we get snippets of. And
well, I'd even argue like Michelle Monaghan didn't have any sort of character to flesh out. It was so one dimensional and not really there. And
I agree. I still feel like I did have some empathy for her. There were some nice.
Because she's a brilliant actress. Yeah.
She definitely that was probably one of the bigger strengths, is that they took a pretty thin story and, you know, these really talented actors, she cast really well. These really talented actors like pretty much rang out, you know, every last drop of whatever story there was of this. But I think that's really where it fails is the story and maybe some of the writing. I think since this is a written directed by a name I will not attempt to say.
Okay. Fair enough.
Nick Yatu Jusu.
And he still did it.
Yeah. I do the opposite. I say something and I do the opposite of it. It's kind of how I do those things.
We're here to give you what you want. Okay. And then we knew that's what you wanted. We know you want us to fail. So we will try our best.
I am all about landing on my face. Let's see. I think this is like her first, like, I think, oh, she did a two sentence horror stories episode.
Oh, which, I don't want to know. It's not me talking shit. I worked on like the season that wasn't a part of HBO yet or Warner Brothers. I think it's Warner Brothers. It's the same fucking thing, right? So I worked on like the web version of that before it went to like main streaming or whatever. Right, and the reality is it's like it's always going to be a bunch of like directors getting their first shot. So for, this is going to sound like an insult, but like for this person to write and create something like this is very impressive. Is it the best thing I've ever seen? Mm-hmm. No. And like, absolutely not, actually. But like, you know, because like there was like this whole story going on where I'm like, okay, I'm a little bit captivated. And then when our protagonist decides to take some time for herself, it almost seemed like a big chunk of the movie was just her trying to feel herself again or whatever. And then I forgot about it. I mean, not like I forgot about everything, but I was just like, are we ever going to go back to that? And then we did. Like, everything just kind of seemed kind of like really hodgepodge together at that point.
I definitely think we need to keep an eye on her, because she just reading her bio, she has a BA from Duke, an MFA from Tisch. She won an award for NYU, the Spike Lee Fellowship Award, and she's definitely has shot a lot of like successful shorts, and so like she did episode of the Two Sentence Horror, and then this is like her first feature, and for our first feature, it's really really incredibly well done for a first feature.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
and she may be, you know, an auteur, you know, one day, just purely because I think that she definitely seems to be writing from personal. She writes very personal stuff.
For sure. But with that said, I had a hard time pinpointing what the actual conflict of this movie was.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
Because, I'm a little confused, say a few things, right? I mean, I think we're on the same page with that, right? You could say a few things about, like, I think this was a conflict, but this also could have been the conflict. I'm not sure. It seemed like the main bad guy or the antagonist was really herself, her premonitions, ? Like, I'm not sure.
Yeah, it does get a little heady in that. We can probably dive into spoilers because I really want to like maybe walk this through so I can get a larger sense, because I was pretty confused on some of it.
Wait. No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into
spoilers.
So, so her kid is kidnapped, right? Was the idea, right? I think. Or like was taken away through customs or some, I don't know what the fuck happened. But then what really was confusing to me was at the end, she tries to kill herself, which she was having premonitions of, I guess. Specifically with like always being doused in water and then seeing a mermaid version of herself, I think. But everything's fine because she's having a new kid with her new hot boyfriend or whatever.
Wait, we had spoilers yet? I'm
not sure what there is to spoil. I'm like, there was no like,
well, I think I want to, like you said, like the supernatural element of this is that she feels like she's cursed or haunted by something, we're not quite sure, and she has a love interest whose grandmother kind of walks out the theory that mermaids are trying to get her, or she was a mermaid.
I don't understand. Yeah, that was not clear to me at all. I was just,
I like where they're going with the metaphor. Cause I at first, when they said they brought up the idea of a mermaid, I thought, wow, that's a fucking, I never heard of that before. So that was like a new idea. That was kind of like, well, let's see where it goes with it, you know? Because
What was the whole connection she was feeling with that picture of the person that was on fire? And then that played an important part for reasons, and I couldn't understand the connection between that and like being the mermaid and then being haunted by herself.
Yeah, and I couldn't quite understand, like, because they're playing with time. There's definitely like some time elements where, like specifically like the very end, like you were almost, like before I cut you off, you were saying like how she has this love interest. She finds out that the child is dead, that she's been paying for, that the friend, sister, relative, accidentally lost track of her son who died. And
yeah, but then why travel to America anyway?
I feel like there must have been some sort of mental break from the character. Like maybe she knew this already and she was just like broken by it.
That's what I was gathering too, but I also did. I don't know. I didn't understand. I had a hard time understanding.
Yeah, because that's where I thought they were going with it. Because she's like kept like paying money and like, oh, I'm trying to save money for a kid. When she kept watching that video, and that made me believe that maybe some of the stuff that's going on in where did they say they were from? Sierra Leone or? I forget where they said they were from.
I don't remember.
Senegal? That the child was already dead and she was kind of like living in this grief-stricken kind of mindset or whatever. That's what I gathered from it.
Yes.
But then...
I think director, writer needs someone to take a pass at her scripts is all I'm taking from this. Cause all the pretty awesome elements are there, but like somebody needs to be there to be like, no, it needs to like, you need to do this or else it's, you know?
Yeah.
Cause now I'm starting to gather, this person is more of like a director writer. That's like, you know, you have to like gather these things for yourselves. But like if, you know, I don't know, there's something missing.
Because I thought that where they were going was that she has like the easiest way I can describe it is like a memento type issue where she doesn't remember the past and that she's already kind of like in this damaged mindset. And that's why like she kept calling and nobody was answering her phone and she had like an old video of talking to her son because she didn't really know how to deal with that grief. And the really weird part was like when she finally figures out her son's dead, she like becomes pregnant in some weird flashback scene and then has a kid with this other love interest that we had just met, which is super weird, right? Like to end it that way.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Was it a flashback? I took it like she went to go kill herself after that moment. And then she found out she was pregnant because when they pulled her out of the water, they're like, be careful. She's pregnant.
Somebody said that. Yeah, the grandmother of the love interest said that, and I thought that was super confusing. Like, why? What? The way that information was relayed was confusing, very jarring, very like suddenly, and then we don't get a ton of explanation, and then we end, which is a little tough to digest. Like all the ones, it's like too much there, right?
Yeah, like we end in like a hopeful note, question mark? Like it was like,
yeah,
because
yeah,
to explain this better for people listening, it is, this all happens within like 3 minutes. You know, it's not, yeah. you know, we're not exaggerating when we say it's all happening super fast. And then it just ends. But you're right. Yeah. It's like, what the fuck?
There's some really nice, like tense moments, in it. Well-designed moments, but like I said, I feel like the stories and the thing that ends up letting this movie down in a way. Everything, this maybe even in this horror element, feels too doesn't quite fit this story.
No, you're trying to tell. Absolutely right. The horror element feels tacked on.
Yeah, but I want to say that wasn't. She's doing it for a purpose, but I'm not quite sure it was clear. Does that make sense? Like,
yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like the mood was supposed to be similar to like The Nighthouse, but didn't quite land that sort of horror aspect of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree with that.
I can also say like, I get how it's a horror movie, but I wasn't at any point sort of unnerved or scared, even when like the scary things were supposed to be happening. I was just like, oh, okay. Is she okay? Like, is she okay mentally? What's going on? You know,
like, yeah, I kind of felt like we were going through the motions, kind of living, you know, a fly in the wall in her life. And then they ratchet up the horror elements. We introduced the mermaid. We introduced that she possibly could be a mermaid. And then she kind of has like an episode where she almost kills a little girl. She doesn't go all the way.
Which again, that little girl was so chill about that too. Like, oh, it's okay. It's like, she had like a knife to like basically her chest or her neck. And she was like, you know, it happens. Like what?
Yeah. I'm not going to be critical of a child actor. They're learning. I'll dodge that. I think my favorite overall stuff is when that set of sequences where she's out with her love interest, Malik, and she meets the grandmother and they're having dinner with each other and they drive around. There's some like sexy music and they end up making love or boning. I thought that was like the best directed sequence in the whole movie, in my opinion.
Actually, if I had a favorite scene, like favorite, the way it played out, before those moments, before they actually go out for the first time, they had already met, right? And he's like walking in front of her, like casually down the street or going somewhere. And she happens to be right next to him. And he turns and looks and he like takes out his AirPod and she takes off her like headphone. And I was like, oh, this is like really nice. I felt the energy and like the flirtation. And like, for one, she's not stressed about work or about her child or whatever, you know? It was really nice. Mm-hmm.
And they had very good chemistry together. Like, I felt like that was like the most natural stuff that was super, had a lot of like instant chemistry and easy
again
stuff to enjoy. Yeah.
Gorgeous cast. So I think it's easy to just pull off when you cast is like, beautiful. Like, yeah.
They did a really nice stuff that I noticed that I enjoyed was the there's some great lighting in like terms of like neon lights and there's some nice stuff, beautifully like lit, and like that whole sequences we're talking about are like beautifully lit and really well done. That was to me that whole set of sequences are the ones that stood out the most for me. Wow. None of the spooky stuff.
The spooky stuff was not, I hate to say, it wasn't very good. It was like, I could move on from that pretty quickly. I was just like, okay, let it happen, whatever.
I think she's a young director who's just feeling it. She's feeling herself, you know? She wants to do the horror stuff, and that's cool. I mean, you know, I think she's a writer, director, auteur mindset, right?
Guillermo, give her one of the stories.
Give her one of the stories, and please.
Now thinking about it too, I think a comeback for this director, because I think he went off because he became kind of a douche. But Nicholas Rafe, what's his name? Something. The guy that did like Only God Forgives and Drive. I think
he's coming out He's coming out the Netflix movie at the beginning of this year. Something he made.
Oh, that's fun. Because I know people don't love his stuff, but I get to see a movie he's done where I hated it. Like, even the ones where I was like, I don't know about that one. I'm like, I enjoyed a lot about it.
I think Drive was so, like...
It's probably his most commercial movie, I would say.
Yeah, it was so... like, I don't describe it. Like, it was so, like... Almost like it's provoked this like rejection of his work when it was such a bit to me. The best way I can kind of describe it is kind of like a cinematic bomb, like time bomb that blew up. Not a bomb, right? Not like an actual bomb, like like it's described, like a time bomb that blew up culturally. And you saw a pop culture bomb. Let's call it that. A pop culture bomb. That's where true, literally yeah. like everything that so much of that movie got just splattered all over pop culture. It was everywhere to right. where it became kind of just a reaction to people just a lot of ways people turned on the movie because it just became like this thing where it's just feeding into like every part of our culture. It was like music, style, influence, you know, just every little thing. It was like touching. And that's really difficult for some directors, you know, that have a film like that. And they just like, you know, people have such high expectations from them to where they're ready to pounce on them with like if the movie's like kind of just okay or just or bad, you yeah. know what I mean? So I think he has that reputation or sense of him, you know. And I've also heard that he is a bit of a confident eccentric, yeah. if that makes yeah. sense.
Yeah, he's a cocky so. Douchebag. That's what I've heard too. But I gotta say, like, again, I think much like Quentin Tarantino, where he's also a cocky asshole, but even his like worst movie is definitely not the worst movie you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah.
You know, his worst movie is still watchable and still fun. Like Nicholas, well, I forgot his fucking name, but
Wending
like Neon Demon, I fucking loved it. Mm-hmm. It was so dark yeah. and so disgusting and like, I don't know, I just loved everything about it. Only God yeah. Forgives, I thought that was great too, but it wasn't like, I think people wanted another Drive and it's like, no, it's definitely not that.
Exactly.
It's
exactly.
a fucking yeah, people... Korean, it's basically a, not a Korean film. Well, to me, it kind of felt like a Korean revenge film, except you're going through the perspective of not the hero.
Yeah, that movie definitely was the opposite of what people would have expected from it. People wanted Drive 2.
Yeah.
Which is such a hard thing to kind of follow up on.
Because again, you know, I feel like that's his most commercial. It almost played out like a music video.
Yeah, especially when he smashed the face in. When he smashed, right?
Yeah, you know the one thing I got out of that fucking scene was like, I want ankle high wingtip boots now, and I got them. So that's what I got out of that scene. I completely. Ignored that some dude's face got smashed in by the heel of his shoe. And I was like, yeah, ankle high wingtip shoes.
Yeah, no, yeah, that movie. Yeah, that's he's had a very interesting career. Yeah, but he should do a Guillermo del Toro caricature. He should, yeah. Okay. we kind of veered off there, but yeah. Do you have any, just sum up your thoughts before we go to ratings.
I think in general, I don't know if I can confidently recommend this film, but I would say it had so many beautiful elements to it that I am mm-hmm. excited for what's going to happen next. And I think right? if like the next film, or maybe even the next film after that is like a fucking masterpiece, then I'll start recommending, like, have you seen The Nanny? So you can see where she came from. Cause that was also yeah. pretty good to a certain point.
I'll say that when Anna Diop wins an Oscar, I'm going to say I saw her in The Nanny probably. Yeah. It's cause clearly she's going to be on to very, very big things. I mean,
it's surprising that she's not already her. Doing it, dude. She's
yeah, she's there. Yeah, she's a fucking star, 100%.
And not for nothing, like, holy shit, is she like one of the most beautiful people to ever grace a fucking screen? That shouldn't matter, but I mean, I feel like it should make her like a superstar.
That's what, that's the difference between a movie star and a character actor, right? Like,
because she's already a fucking brilliant actress. Like, it's insane. But yeah, like, mm-hmm. Oh, she's so beautiful.
Yeah, definitely. Alrighty. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it?
Sexy bones. Ooh, Just rate the movie.
I'm gonna give the nanny name, Fran. Oh, sorry. Wrong review. I'm going to give the nanny 5.7 sexy spooky bones.
Yeah, I'm definitely right there with you. I'm gonna also give it 5 sexy spooky bones. Interesting, but you know, I don't know. It quite scratched the horror itch. Could not recommend this as a horror movie.
Could not. Yeah, I had a hard time buying that it was a horror movie. I saw like there's definitely horror elements, but it's not. You know, Pee-wee's Big Adventure had horror elements too, but I'm not going to say that's a horror movie, right? So.
Die Hard is set at Christmas, but that doesn't make it a Christmas movie.
It does not make it a Christmas movie, even though it is a Christmas movie. So
it's a movie set at during Christmas, but it is not a Christmas movie. Okay, let's not have this fight.
I actually, because I went over to a friend's house to go watch Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, and then to watch a rom-com movie called Hanukkah on Rye. Which, please don't cancel me. Everybody, including Jewish people, consecutively decided that that movie should have been called Jew Got Mail, because it was a blatant ripoff of You Got Mail until it was like bad at the end. I mean, it wasn't good to begin with, but it was like, it got me thinking, like, what's my favorite like Christmas rom-com, you know? And I thought about Dan in Real Life is a pretty good one. But I think, You Got Mail is probably my favorite Christmas rom-com.
I think it's The Holiday. I think you're 100% wrong. The Holiday is the best Christmas
you're
rom-com.
You're such a Jack Black stan.
Yeah. I'm a Cameron Diaz stan, man. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
You ever see that interview with Jack Black where somebody's like, well, I mean, you've done a Christmas movie before, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, I have? And he was like completely confused and oblivious. He's like, yeah, The Holiday is like... Oh, you're right. Yes, I was in The Holiday.
Yeah. That's super funny. Alrighty. Alright, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky. Oh, it's not even a Christmas episode. Sorry. Alright, enjoy yourselves.
Yeah.
Love another. Love yourself and stay spooky. Goodbye.
Skeleton crew, it's time. The boys say goodbye. We love all of you. We really have to go poo. We'll miss you, but it's time for us to go.